Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. You know what I've been thinking about?
What, girl?
I have been thinking about the state of media.
Wow, okay.
I mean, big topic, yes. Right? But it's something that you and I talk important. About a lot. It's obviously very important. We met through the Toledo City Paper.
Yeah.
We do this podcast with WGTE. So it's like we're always kind of thinking about what the state of media is right now and right. Where it's headed. And what's really awesome is we actually at WGTE did a panel, Meet the Media.
Yeah.
And I found myself so impressed with the questions that our host was asking.
Yes.
So then in talking about this with Libby, we thought, why not bring the host on our show and we can ask him some questions? So we have none other than Mr. Journalism himself, Jaden Jefferson. Thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Here. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, we are just so excited to talk to you. And I think obviously you're pretty well known, not just in our community, but nationwide. And so, you know, I want to talk a little bit first about your background. So kind of growing up and getting before you got into more of the public eye, what was your life like?
Yeah, a lot different. I can say that. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing was obviously a lot of people found out about my work in 2019. And that was really the first year I did anything related to journalism. I was kind of covering community events the way most journalists kind of get their start these days. But it was also an election year. So you had this huge Democratic primary for president and Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. She was in Toledo. And so I conducted an interview with her. And of course, that interview kind of went viral. It was on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. It was on a bunch of different podcasts, The Washington Post, and so on. And so that was kind of the first national exposure that I had.
And well, so, and that was not only because of your tenacity right. and your great question asking, but that was because you also were kind of heralded as this kid journalist, right?
Yeah.
So how old were you when you did that interview?
11 years old at the time.
Wow.
And obviously, because that was pre-COVID, things were a lot different. But I mean, just seeing now that a lot more younger people are doing this. You know, at the time, I felt like I may have been the only person that was young and doing journalism. But there are a lot of people I know, including across the border in Canada, that are now young journalists like myself.
Yeah. That's and awesome. I mean, 11 years old, that's really young. Talk a little bit about having that public appearance at that age. What was that like?
Yeah. You know, it wasn't as much as people may have expected, you know, because I still kind of view myself as the same person I was before. It's just now that every time I post on social media, it's more than just like me talking to myself. It's kind of like other people are hearing my opinions. But, you know, it really hasn't changed much. I think that a lot of what I aim to do now is just kind of being that informational person that if people need to know something, I'm the person. And that's particularly true for state government. I mean, a lot of my reporting today focuses on local politics, state politics, as well as the national political environment. So I'm basically covering everything that people need to know.
Absolutely. And walk us through a little bit about some of those early opportunities and public appearances. I mean, you were on Ellen DeGeneres. You were talking with Oprah. You had a lot of really cool interviews that gained a lot of visibility early for your career. So talk a little bit about those.
Yeah, a lot of those experiences were very unexpected. I think a lot of people can attest to, you know, you have a moment that gets a lot of attention and you don't exactly expect what follows. And that was certainly true for me doing national talk shows because obviously I'm coming from the perspective of someone who growing up in Toledo, Ohio, doing the news, I never expected to be on national television. But, you know, it really was an interesting experience because you're kind of getting this behind the scenes look at how people do national TV. And certainly with the interviews that I did with Oprah Winfrey and Brad Pitt, you kind of see the different perspective of this is what it's like doing an interview for a national audience versus doing an interview for your local audience.
Yeah.
Certainly it's a different environment than maybe you're used to.
Yeah. Do you feel like that was like motivating at that point or stressful maybe?
You know, I kind of treated them like I would any other interview. A lot of people are kind of surprised by that. But the same way I prep for Oprah Winfrey is the same way I'd prep for an interview with a city council member.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of doing that background research of who is this person. Obviously with Oprah, you kind of already know who you're going in to talk to. But, you know, it's the same background research. It's the same kind of process of what do people not know about this person that I can kind of help bring out. And so the process doesn't really change.
Well, and it goes to show just that your heart and your reason for doing this is totally in the right place. I mean, no one gets into journalism for money or fame.
For sure.
You got into it for a very, you know, noble and a reason full of integrity, but you garnered a lot of early appearances publicly. And I feel like with all of those cool experiences, there had to be one that stood out to you, like something most rewarding or, you know, something that was the coolest, however you want to frame that.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many of them. But I will say that original interview with Senator Warren, I think, is really great to look at in hindsight, because at the time, I didn't necessarily consider myself a political journalist. I was kind of your typical general assignment reporter. But as I look at that now, I find it to be really a big deal, because even today, I'm still pressing for interviews with senators and members of Congress. And just to have had an interview that came about in such an easy manner, it's just like, man, I wish it was this easy today, because it's so hard to get in contact with staffers and communications individuals. So a lot of it's a lot more difficult now. But when I was 11, it was a lot easier to land interviews like that. And so I think that initial experience still sticks out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're talking about interviewing the senators and things and having that political focus. Can you talk a little bit about why political focus?
For sure. I don't think people pay enough attention. I think the federal government will always get enough attention. I mean, that's a given. But state government doesn't really get the attention it deserves. Because
absolutely.
You look at local news coverage today, a lot of this just has to do with budgets being slashed, journalists being laid off. And so there really isn't anyone keeping tabs on what's happening in your state house. And the crazy thing is, more gets done in your state house than in Congress. Congress mm-hmm. barely gets together to accomplish anything, but yet in your state house, there are things constantly happening. Things are constantly changing, but yet there's no attention there. And so I feel like it's really important to provide that information to people because, you know, it's great to have coverage of other things that are happening in the world for sure, but state government, we should all be at least aware of what's happening, because not only is that where our tax dollars are being allocated, those are where the decisions that directly impact us are being made.
And, you know, you have had a big personal network here in Toledo with not only the council members that you interview and then kind of your outreach within other facets of our community. But talk about kind of gaining access to some of those media lists, how you built your brand in this area and how you were able to kind of create that network around you.
Yeah, a big part of it is just talking to people. And that is probably the hardest part when you're starting out as a journalist, because obviously people don't know who you are. And so a lot of it is reaching out to people, kind of informing them as to what your intentions are in the field. And so I just had to talk to a lot of people in order to kind of build up that familiarity, because once people know who you are, they will occasionally contact you about different things that they want coverage on. And so I'll reach out, talk to them. And so a lot of it's just really wholesome conversation. And then it kind of becomes a relationship where they understand the type of stories you cover. And then there's kind of that relationship that's developed where they know that this is a story that I'd be willing to take up, and this is a story I maybe wouldn't take up. And so there are a lot of different relationships that I've kind of had to cultivate in the last 7 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, doing all of that yourself, we talk a lot about personal branding. Can you talk a little bit about how that kind of pertains to journalism and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, initially as a journalist, I never thought of myself as having in a very formal way a brand. But, you know, as I've continued on in my career, it's something you kind of realize that, well, there is kind of this idea that people associate with you. In other words, you have a brand. And so, you know, I don't think about it too often, but I think the biggest thing is my brand is just kind of bringing substance to journalism. You know, I'm very narrow in my reporting focus, and that's very intentional because I think people will know to come to me for news in local and state government. They'll know to come to me for interviews with politicians. And I think that that's become more clear. You know, people know what to expect when it comes to Jayden Jefferson. Now, they may not know the exact story to expect because it can be anything, but they know what the general focus is. And
yeah.
So I think that's become something that's more clear to folks in recent years.
Part of how you built that brand for yourself, how people know to come to you for that news, is through your use of your social media.
Yeah.
Because you are, I mean, we highlighted this at the panel too, but you are so savvy with all of your social media usage. So I really want to know your thoughts on the impact of social media in journalism. And I know that's a huge loaded question,
yes.
But I want to leave it a little more open-ended so that you can interpret that how you want.
Yeah, I think there are pluses and minuses to it, obviously. One of the big pluses is that I'm connected directly with my audience, you know, because obviously back in the day, there wasn't that kind of relationship where people were able to post on Facebook or Instagram about the news. You had to wait until 6 o'clock to get that story, and there was very limited time on it. But now with social media, I'm able to spend a lot of time on stories. And for an audience member that's really engaged with their state government, that's really a gift to them because they can consistently find something different. And so I think that's a huge plus. One of the minuses, however, is that social media algorithms, they don't exactly promote substance. Content tends to be geared toward what's going to keep you on the platform the longest. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of that is not really news. A lot of of it's maybe funny videos. It's maybe, you know, the classic internet cat videos, the memes, you know, and you can enjoy a healthy dose of that, obviously. But, you know, it's really difficult to overcome that because especially in local news, we're still figuring it out. I mean, a lot of newsrooms just today are kind of figuring out how to navigate social media. And so the way I approach it is just kind of being directly communicating with my audience, you know, and that has yielded some positive results where I'm just in front of my camera talking about, you know, a bill that's going through the legislature. People can connect with that because it's like having a conversation with someone at the office. And so I kind of bring that casual style to social media because the last thing people want to see is someone who's dressed up, who's overprepared. You know, I just try to give people something authentic.
Yeah, definitely.
I love
and
that.
Do you feel like there's a platform that you've gotten better engagement from versus another platform?
I've been really surprised by Instagram, you know, because that's an audience that skews younger. And I don't exactly associate young people with having deep interest in policy, but I've learned a lot in recent years that is actually something younger people want. And I think that that's something newsrooms in general are starting to learn because there was always this assumption that you can't connect with young people by telling stories about policy and government, when in reality, that's exactly the kind of content young people want. They want to know what's happening in state government because they want to be engaged citizens. You know, for so long, we've wondered, why is it that Gen X, why is it that boomers are more active in voting? Well, it's because no one's connecting with younger people.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the ways where I've been able to connect with people and just kind of provide that context that they need to understand this very complex political ecosystem we're all living in.
For sure. Absolutely. Which, I mean, between social media and then like all of the other different mediums to in which you can pursue journalism, you intersect in a lot of those in your work. And you're also the host then of This Week in the World, the Global Affairs podcast.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
This has been one of my most fun pet projects. Like, I know we're going to talk Roman empires later. This has been like one of my personal like pet projects. I started this show about 12 episodes ago. And my big intention with this was that people tend to understand what's happening in their neighborhood, which is good. It's good to be connected. But really, living in the U.S., there really isn't that global perspective because we kind of think of ourselves as being at the center of the world. And in many ways, we are economically and politically, but there are other things happening. You know, we have the war in Ukraine. We have war in the Middle East right now. And so I think it's good for people to kind of have that global perspective to understand our place in the world. And so this show was just doing exactly that because I personally consume a lot of global news. You know, I watch a lot of the BBC because I want to understand what's happening outside of my own country and have that globalized perspective. Because if you don't have that perspective, I mean, how can you go about thinking about your country's own foreign policy? And so this is really that show to bring understanding. And I bring in a variety of different guests, a lot of different academics, historians, economists, just kind of bring that expertise so then we can better understand the show. So it's about an hour and a half, or it's about a half hour each week. And it really gets to a lot in a short amount of time, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and not just globally with your focus, but also locally, talk about your podcasting experience here.
Yeah, so I've been working with WGTE on the show Toledo Works, and that was in partnership with the Toledo Free Press. And through this show, we've gotten to kind of provide stories about different Toledoans and their jobs. And I know on the surface that may sound like you're kind of just getting an understanding of the roles of those positions, but really we're talking to people about their personal involvement in their career path. Mm-hmm. How did they get there? What are some of the challenges that come with that? What are some of the positives that they've gotten out of that? And so I think it's just one way of better understanding where Toledoans are at, because there are some truly authentic stories there. I mean, we did an episode on education, talking with teachers. And it's important because teachers already face a lot of challenges, but you will find through those interviews that there are a lot of reasons why they stay in that position. You know, they really care about what happens with our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's good for people to kind of have that perspective and understanding that everyone's job, everyone's life is difficult right now.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to provide some patience, especially when it comes to education. I mean, budgets are stretched and teachers are obviously stretched in that same way. So just kind of having that empathy that's needed right now.
We've talked about, and you've touched on this in a couple different ways throughout this episode so far, but kind of the passion for local journalism. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with the state house versus federal government.
Right.
And so, you know, talk about your perspective from how local journalism is so important to communities and how it kind of plays into the national elements of journalism, but is different in a way.
Yeah, I say this all the time. Many national stories start local. You will notice that a lot of stories that are maybe reported in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, they will reference local newspapers, which is why it's really concerning that a lot of local newspapers are shutting down. Because who are the people that are paying attention if it's not local newsrooms? And so it's a really huge concern of mine. But if you look at a lot of these big national stories, there's been a lot of great reporting, for instance, when it comes to federal budget cuts, how those cuts have impacted local communities, because national newsrooms only have so many journalists. You know, they right. can't cover everything. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have people on the local level who are able to kind of provide that idea of what are the implications of federal policy changes in a non-abstract way. And local journalism does that, you know, and that's why it's essential to this entire media ecosystem. Obviously, it's evolving, but local newsrooms are evolving too. I mean, working with the Toledo Free Press, we've evolved, you know, initially yeah. as a print publication, but now as a nonpartisan, nonprofit newsroom where we're doing videos, we're doing audio, we're doing articles online. So we're basically everywhere that everyone else is. And mm-hmm. so that evolution is so important.
Yeah. I think through all of those different mediums and on a local scale, national scale, there's a lot of conversations happening about misinformation oh, yeah. in journalism. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on how our audience can help to distinguish, you know, fact-based journalism, opinions, misinformation in this kind of era of news deserts.
Yeah, this is something I have to tell friends. This is something I have to tell my parents. Before you share something on social media, check to make sure it's real. This is a very basic one. And I'm not saying the AI summary counts. It doesn't. I mean, look for one or two, maybe three verified articles behind what you're sharing. You know, we all have a responsibility. I mean, the First Amendment's a great thing, but let's be responsible about it. And so let's make sure that what we're sharing is legitimate, because a lot of people don't like the discourse in this country. But a big reason for this discourse being where it's at right now is that we're not even having a debate based on facts. We're having debates based on opinions, based on feelings. We have to research and determine what is actually true, because if we don't agree on the facts, then we can never get anywhere. And yeah. so the biggest thing is that people have to make sure that what they're sharing is legitimate. And I know there's a lot of distrust of institutional media organizations. I can understand that. But at the end of the day, our system's never going to be perfect. I mean, there are going to be flaws with traditional media outlets, but there's a lot of professionalism in those outlets. And so we kind of just have to be able to have that understanding. And of course, a changing media environment presents new challenges because there are more voices, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But let's be able to distinguish fact from fiction. That's a necessary skill right now.
Absolutely.
And then, I mean, outside of that conversation, too, where we're talking about media literacy and all the implications of that, there's also this idea of sustainable business models
yeah.
for journalism and for local papers, even for national. A lot of national publications are also really struggling right now,
for
too.
Sure.
So in your perspective, is there a sustainable business model that exists for news media beyond just advertising?
Yeah.
And then who is paying for the news?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest mistakes, because I've looked into this issue and it's complex. One of the biggest mistakes that news organizations did at the dawn of the internet was provide their information and their content for free. Mm. Because once you provide something for free, there's an expectation that it always will be. And that's where local newspapers come in. Because initially, when the internet first launched, they said, we need to take advantage of this. We need to make sure that all of our articles are posted online. It's a great way of bringing in engagement, but is it bringing in money? Not necessarily. And so we're kind of trying to do the work of righting those wrongs from all those years ago. But one model that really sticks out to me, though, is the nonprofit model. Because one of the pluses to that is that you're not really accountable to anyone but your audience. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen that for years. There has been that tension between advertisers and the newsroom. And a lot of newsrooms will say there's a firewall between the two, which is good, but that isn't always the case. So I would like to see that the nonprofit model expands, because I think there's grassroots support for it. Even working for the Toledo Free Press, all of our reporting is paid for by our readers. And so I think that is the way forward. Now, obviously, it depends on the community, whether or not that model can be successful. I'm thinking about smaller communities where there maybe isn't as big an audience. Mm-hmm. Are there enough people that are going to be paying into that system? And so it is complex, but I think that that's the way forward, because that's how we get a media that is more accountable to the audience. And that's how you kind of get more grassroots storytelling. And so it's not going to work everywhere, but I think it's working in a lot more places than maybe we would have expected before.
Yeah. And I mean, even more complex when you bring in the idea of access to media.
For sure.
And how, you know, I've always operated under the model of everyone deserves to know the news.
Yes.
Right. So then it's like, how are we providing as journalists the access necessary for people who might not be able to afford to pay or subscribe to whatever the model is, whether that's digital or, you know, a print publication that you get delivered to your house. So I think the access component of that is really interesting.
And that point is so important, because for me, you know, I'm just able to afford a subscription to The New Yorker. And there is a lot of high quality storytelling in The New Yorker. But a New Yorker subscription sometimes can be $72 a year, you know, and that's not, you know, nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's where I kind of raised that concern of, you know, those traditional media outlets. How are they going to adapt, you know, because can you expect, you know, a media organization like The New Yorker to go nonprofit tomorrow? I mean, not exactly a realistic expectation. And so that's definitely one of the big struggles. But, you know, I'm also subscribed to the Hartford Current. I'm subscribed to the Chicago Tribune. And I take advantage of those like $1 a month deals because you get a lot of high quality reporting for a low price.
Absolutely.
But then again, you know, it's not sustainable as the consumer, you know.
Special
offers aren't offered year round. So it's a difficult thing to deal with right now.
Yeah, but I mean, to your point, that could be a scenario where the local models are kind of training and teaching the national models.
Sure.
So I am hopeful that that model becomes sustainable too. I really love that.
Sure. And I'm kind of jumping back. You touched a minute ago on the AI summary, which obviously I feel like we can't have this conversation without touching on AI.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, you know, to get your thoughts on how generative AI is changing the production and ethics of journalism right now.
Yeah, I will be the first to admit I'm very hostile toward AI. You know, a lot of people say you should be open to it, but I'm not really one of those people. I mean, I don't really see many of the benefits that are talked about. I know Silicon Valley's excited about it because there's money to be made. You know, if Mark Zuckerberg can buy one more yacht, why not be excited? But for me personally, I'm not a big fan, you know, because I haven't seen many of the pluses. You know, I can see it being very helpful in healthcare. You know, that can be a really great application. And there's a lot of good news coming out of the healthcare field when it comes to AI. But from the journalism perspective, it's still very difficult to pierce out where the good benefits can be. Because, you know, there are ways in which it can scan through documents that can be helpful to investigative reporters, maybe save some time. But I don't ever want to see AI applied in writing articles because something is lost there, you know. And even looking at education these days, a lot of people are writing essays with AI, you know. And think about what we're losing as a society if people can't put their thoughts onto paper. And so I'm really concerned about where AI is going to go. You know, I would like to see it be applied in a helpful manner and in a way that benefits society. But we still have a lot of challenges here. Obviously, data centers are very contentious in this part of the state because, of course, they're coming to Northwest Ohio and people don't necessarily want them in their backyard. There are environmental consequences, energy consequences. So it is a lot at once. But I say that down the road, perhaps there will be some benefits to this. But in the journalism field, I think it's going to take time, especially with AI-generated video content.
Yes.
I saw that Cleveland.com ran a short little experiment where they had AI generate video content to tell stories. Wasn't very well received.
No.
And I wasn't surprised by that because, you know, a lot of local outlets I follow because I associate with the reporters there. You know, I like seeing them tell a story on their cell phone. It may be scrappy, but it's authentic. And so, you know, I'm glad to see Cleveland.com cancel that project, it looks like. It looks like they put it on the back burner. It was a good idea. But so I think that there are still, it's going to take time to understand exactly how this is going to change our field.
Yeah. Time and regulation. And,
you look at Congress isn't exactly of the age where you would expect big knowledge about technology.
Right.
So maybe Washington might not be where we get the regulation, but perhaps on the state level, there may be some more conversations about it. But yeah, I think it's a lot to understand for all of us, you know, not just legislators, but everyday people. You know, if I were a member of Congress, I don't even think I would know where to start. But certainly, you know, data centers are the prominent issue right now.
Well, and I will share my honorable mention, Roman Empire, for today is this scene from the show Hacks. where they're basically debating AI and this guy is saying, you know, it's so great. It does all this stuff, whatever. And then the woman responds and she's like, yeah, of course you're going to say it's so great. You're making money off of it.
Right.
You're getting paid to produce this and to share it out to people. And so it's fascinating because it's like, I am always someone who wants to seek to understand why something is, I mean, obviously this is coming out. All workplaces are trying to implement it some way into what we're doing. And it's like, I really want to understand from the curious part of my brain, what is the benefit here? What are you seeing in this that maybe I'm not seeing? Is there a broader perspective? And I have yet to hear from someone, A, in the field of journalism, first of all, but B, in really any creative, non-profiting field
right.
talking about the importance of or benefit of AI.
And yeah.
it would be really fascinating to hear that perspective, definitely.
Yeah, because I have a lot of questions. You know, I'm always one of those people who's following the money, and you see this big push right now. And especially looking at Wall Street, a lot of people are questioning right now, how is the Dow doing so well right now? Well, a lot of it's tech companies.
Yeah.
And the pitch that they're making about AI is clearly being heard by someone, but I don't know if it's sustainable, you know, because there's the concern that this is a bubble. And I think the ingredients are there because these companies aren't exactly making money from it yet. And so I don't know how this goes. You know, maybe it's a repeat of the 2000s, but if it is, you know, maybe houses will get cheaper again. So
maybe we'll just have to catch up with you in a couple years and see where we're at with right. AI. Make this a full-length episode yeah. debating. But, you know, I mean, when we're talking about AI, we're talking about local journalism and citing your sources and the distrust. A lot of this comes back to media literacy.
For sure.
And so I really want to know from your perspective, like, do you have tips on how people can better their own media literacy and then also why they should care? Like,
yeah.
why should people care about being media literate?
Yeah, that's a big question. I think the biggest thing is that you want to be able to understand just how things work. I think fundamentally just feeling like you're in control is a good feeling. You know, I recently, of course, voted in my first election, you know, and obviously a big part of that was understanding who these candidates are, what the issues are. And so that's a very important thing. And so it's just good to feel like you're in the driver's seat, because if you don't have a good information base to make your decisions off of, then there's really, you know, a big concern there. And so it's just kind of good to be well read. But one way of people kind of putting that into practice is looking at where they currently get information. Are you getting the majority of your information from personalities? Are you getting the majority of your information from journalists? You know, kind of understanding what your media diet looks like, because if you kind of change your media diet, you'll see similar effects to when you change your actual food diet. You know, eating mm-hmm. vegetables versus eating something that's heavily processed, there will be a different impact on you. You know, one of the big things we're experiencing right now as a society is polarization. Everyone is very polarized. Well, part of that is because we're not exactly getting information from people who know what they're talking about.
Right.
We're getting information from personalities and things, getting content that reaffirms our own views. We have to go outside of that. And so that means going to journalists for news like mm-hmm. you would have done, you know, a few years ago. So I think we have to return to getting our information from journalists rather than just from people who already agree with us. So it really would be a big benefit to society if we actually got outside of those echo chambers.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, to your earlier point, then it puts this pressure on journalists to create this
right.
personality so that people will listen mm-hmm. and that their stories can break through the noise. So it's definitely a
cycle,
contentious
yeah.
situation. Yeah. yeah. Very cyclical for sure.
So obviously we've talked a lot about your career in journalism from such a young age, but I'm really curious about what are some other things that you're involved in, what your other interests are.
Yeah, you know, journalism I think is definitely my primary interest for sure. But, you know, I also kind of consider myself a historian as well, because I think those things go hand in hand. And I'll get into this a little bit later when we discuss our Roman empires. But, you know, I like to look at a lot of history and see what those patterns are today. And so I will spend a lot of my time looking at not just electoral history, but just how we got here, you know? And another thing I like to do is kind of looking at Supreme Court cases, for instance. You know, I'm consistently reporting on congressional elections. One of the big things that changed congressional elections was the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling. Mm-hmm. And that gets a lot of attention now because people are frustrated that they elect people and they don't feel like anything changes. And a lot of that has to do with money and politics. And so I kind of like to look at just the things that have happened in our society that have brought us to where we are today. You know, I think we should do more of that as a society, looking back and saying, well, maybe what were the right steps that we took and what were the wrong steps that we took? Because once we understand that fuller picture, we can make better decisions now. And so, you know, I really enjoy kind of looking at history because I think it kind of provides a roadmap of, you know, where we've been and where we're going.
And I'm curious, too, because obviously at this age, you are 18. You've been doing this since 2019 when you were 11 years old. You've achieved so much at such a young age. And now it's time for you to enter college, if you can believe it. So
yeah.
Please discuss your next steps with our listeners and what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, lucky for me, I found out where I was going a long time ago because, you know, they don't tell you the college admissions process. You will be waiting for weeks to hear back from colleges. And the good news is I did an early decision, which meant that I could find out back in December, and I committed to Connecticut College, and I was actually back in Connecticut about 3 weeks ago for the new student day. But, you know, really a big part of my decision was that it's such a small environment. You know, my high school environment in Maumee Valley, very small classroom sizes, and that's been really beneficial to me because I'm able to have conversations, you know, with my my teachers or soon-to-be professors one-on-one, you know, about history and about things that I'm passionate about. And so I really wanted to continue that. But, you know, another big ambition for me is studying abroad. You know, I think it's important to really understand the world. And that's something that I think journalism has really brought me to doing. So I'm looking forward to that experience as well.
And officially, what is your major?
Yeah, so I'll be majoring in government and then minoring in international relations. And I had some questions about that. People were like, so not journalism? And I will still be a journalist after I graduate. You know, I think one of the big things is I wanted to really focus in on the things that I will be covering, you know, and a lot of what we've learned about diplomacy, for instance, has been just turned on its head in recent years. But obviously, I think it's important to kind of base my education in what I'm going to be spending decades covering on and reporting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, to that point, obviously, a lot of journalists do go in and study what they want to report on rather than the actual art of journalism. And somebody like you who has had so much education and hands-on experience at this point makes total sense. And we're so excited for you
to do this.
It's going to be awesome.
And in thinking of the future of media and journalism, what comes to mind? What do you want to see?
Yeah, you know, we talked earlier about the nonprofit model. I really want to see that grow, you know, because I look at even journalism history. You know, for years, decades, there's been that tension between, you know, the advertiser and the organization. And I think that we're seeing more of that kind of change now, where news organizations are saying, you know what, let's just forget the whole advertising model and let's go and be accountable to just our audience. And so I would really like to see more of that in our future. But another plus that I'm seeing now, and I think we will see more of, is exactly that focus on state government. You know, before it wasn't really a priority, especially in local news, just because there are other things that have taken precedence. But I think that the future will be more focus on how government affects people, because you see right now the high cost of living, that is something that people are really focused on. It's their life. And people want answers as to why that is. And I'm seeing a lot of news organizations, they're taking the initiative to say, well, here's why, you know? And so I think the future is more of that government focused coverage, which we really, really need in order to be accountable as a society.
And then in the future of media, as it pertains to Jaden Jefferson, what is kind of your dream role? And are you working towards something in particular career-wise, or is it just more kind of person and goal-driven based on where it takes you?
Yeah, you know, I'm just kind of letting the wind take me. You know,
I love that.
I definitely have some ambitions, you know, of doing different reporting globally. You know, I really want to get around, experience things. And I want to do that while I'm young, you know, because I may not have Social Security in the future, which means that there may not be that money to travel. So I'd like to do it while I'm young, you know, get to experience some different things. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to working in different mediums. You know, I've kind of grown up in the broadcast journalism space. I could see myself doing that. I could also see myself working for a paper. I could see myself working in radio, you know. So, you know, wherever the opportunity comes from, I'm going to be open to it, you know, because this field is changing. You know, there really isn't one lane that you can take now, because even in my current capacity, I'm hosting a podcast, I write for the Toledo Free Press, and I'm also occasionally doing broadcast things. And so, you know, you're going to probably be doing a little bit of everything, no matter what role you end up taking.
And Absolutely. We will be watching, reading, and listening everywhere you are,
Thank
Jaden.
You.
So before we get to everyone's favorite Roman Empire segment, what advice do you have to share with other young professionals?
For sure. I think the biggest thing is definitely be comfortable with having uncomfortable conversations. You know, as a journalist, you're going to have to do the hard work by asking those really difficult questions. You know, I kind of liken being a journalist to being in a room. There's a big elephant in the corner. Everyone else is ignoring the elephant. It's your job as the journalist to say, hey, there's an elephant over here, you know, and it's making the room stink. You know, that's your job as a journalist to say, why is that elephant here? You know, whose elephant is that? Who's paying for this elephant? Like, that's how I view our profession. And so I feel like for younger journalists, be prepared to do that. You know, it's not always going to feel great, you know, to have people on Facebook emailing you all the time about how they didn't like a certain story, but that comes with the territory. I mean, you know, you look at a lot of the early journalists, they were not necessarily popular people. You know, this is not a profession you're going to go into and people are going to be happy with everything you do. But at the end of the day, you just have to do things ethically by the book and, you know, let what happens happen.
And you didn't think we'd leave without a Roman Empire. It's everyone's favorite segment. And today I think we should start with Libby. Tell us your Roman Empire.
So we're, you know, about halfway through the year at this point. And at the beginning of the year, I shared that my goal was to read 20 books. As a not so avid reader, I decided I was getting back into it this year. And so I'd love to say I completed that at this point, but I am just shy. I have completed, as of the end of May, 16 books of my 20-book goal.
Wow. Claps to Libby.
Thanks so much.
And
I know.
Not even halfway through the year, and you're already at 16. That's
great.
Yes,
it was surprising. I set the bar low for myself this year to just get back into it, and it has been surprisingly easy and very fun. I've been doing a lot of, like, thriller, murder mystery type. I always love Emily Henry. So just a lot of easy reads, but it's been great. So.
And sometimes you need that to get back into the swing of reading. And I feel like a lot of, don't discredit the substance that you're getting in some of these books, because we've been chatting about some of your titles that
I know, we read The Green Mile.
Did read The Green Mile.
A hefty one, which was, it was great. So.
It was a lot of really weird and interesting things, but what can you expect from
Stephen King? Right.
No, I love it. And I'm so proud of you. Congrats.
Thanks.
And listeners, Libby is part of my team of audiobooks or reading a book. So if you are a hater, miss me with that.
It's so easy.
It's great. Audiobooks are awesome. Now, our esteemed guest, Jaden, what is your Roman Empire?
So I mentioned before that I'm a big history buff, and my Roman Empire is President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And I say this because so much of his administration, mind you, served four terms, a lot of his administration's policies are still very much impacting us today. So you look at the New Deal, right? We have Social Security still from that administration. The FDIC came out of that administration. So your bank's not going to lose your money because of the FDIC. You know, and then a lot of those New Deal projects, our own Toledo Zoo was constructed from the New Deal. And so I kind of look at a lot of the things that surround us today and I think, wow, I mean, these decisions, this foresight from decades ago, it's still very present today. And so I feel like a very interesting president. And it just shows that he left behind a legacy, you know? Yeah. And I think looking at our current problems, you know, I think that whoever is proposing something that's going to be similar today and going to really shake things up might gain that similar level of popularity. You know, we see in America today, it is very hard for a candidate to do well with over 50% of the population. But, you know, if you do a lot of big things very fast, voters tend to like it. So seeing what lessons we may learn from that time.
Wow, that's a great one. I love it. Yeah. And on a completely unserious note from that, my Roman Empire today is, first of all, how proud I am of my cousin. So our former guest, Katie Hoffman, on The Come Up, she and I share a cousin who won a Battle of the Bands competition at Kent State. And his band, Lockwood, was given the chance to open for the Driver Era, which is Ross Lynch's band. And, you know, if anybody is big Austin and Ally fans, Ross Lynch is, you know, all over the place from that show and then his own music career. And so he was coming to perform at Kent State. Lockwood won this Battle of the Bands. And Katie and I have pretty much never missed a show that our cousin Christian
supportive
has ever
cousin.
Played. Yeah, 100%. Like, we've never missed. So what did we do? But we went to the show. Now, here's the caveat. It was only for college students because it was one of their, like, you know, like throwback style concerts or like exciting, whatever, college student benefit. We get it. You get all the cool stuff at Kent State. But Katie and I were very determined. So we actually were like texting the kid working at the door to be like, if we have fake tickets on our phone, will you pretend to scan them and let it? By the way, Kent State, if you're listening, this is a joke. We did not sneak into your concert. This did not happen. But we ended up sneaking in, passing for college students, which was very humbling when we got in there. And we were like, wow, it's been a minute since we've been here. This was wild. But I am happy to report that he did a fabulous job. The crowd ate it up. It was fabulous. And honestly, just seeing how much he's grown from like being the little kid playing at local shows to then like doing this big opening concert and having people like filming him and turning on their flashlights and waving them around. Like, it was just so exciting. It was super cool.
Yeah, that had to be super surreal.
So surreal. It was wild. But it was just such a fun experience. And I'm so glad that we definitely did not sneak in to the Kent State show. It was great. And, you know, with that, we are going to sign off. So, Jaden, thank you so much
for having me.
We appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
We want to thank Jaden Jefferson, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is the incomparable Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcast.
Bye, besties.
WGTE. Voices around us.